It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thanks for joining us. When you think about conservation areas, what's the first place that pops into your mind? Is it the African savanna or maybe the Florida Everglades? How about the city of Detroit? The Motor City is actually home to North America's only international wildlife refuge. So there, in Current State's April Van Buren is here to tell us more. Tell us more about the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge, April.
Hi, Mark. Yes, so the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge actually covers 18,000 acres of water and land between Michigan and Ontario. And this refuge is part of a more national effort to help reconnect the 80% of Americans who are city dwellers back with the natural environment. To learn more about the effort to bring conservation to cities, I talked to the guy who literally wrote the book about it. John Hartig is the author of the book, Bringing Conservation to Cities, and he's also the manager of the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge. When I talked to John yesterday, he told me that a wildlife refuge in Detroit makes more sense than you might think.
If you think of Detroit, you think of the industrial heartland. You think of automobiles. You think of the Rust Belt. You don't think of wildlife as the first thought, you know. Yet we are the intersection of two flyways where birds come from Canada and go to their overwintering habitats, and they have to stop and rest and feed. So they funnel through the Detroit River. Over 300 species of birds have been identified in the area, over 30 species of waterfowl, 113 species of fish that use the shoal areas, the wetland areas, the marsh areas as spawning and nursery grounds. So it is like a paradox. You have heavy industry and lots of people and a wildlife refuge, but that's what makes it so special, because right in your backyard, close to home, you can experience something very special. It is not wilderness, but it is so important because today, 80% of the people in the United States and Canada live in urban areas. Where is the next generation of conservationists going to come from? It's going to have to be from urban areas. And historically, April, we've done very little to bring conservation to cities, to make nature part of everyday urban life. And there's a whole movement starting across North America to do precisely that.
Well, this reminds me of a conversation that's happening right now, too, about the National Park Service working to get more people of color visiting national parks and more people from urban areas. Do you think that bringing conservation and wildlife refuges closer to urban areas could make a difference in the number of people and the diversity of people that are exposed to conservation?
Absolutely. You know, no matter where you go throughout the world or what cultures you go to, most people who get exposed to a compelling outdoor experience love it. And then once they get this experience, they can learn how to love it and care for it and become a steward and become a conservationist.
You guys have created this really huge space where people can go and enjoy the wildlife and enjoy the natural scenery around them. But as we mentioned before, Detroit was for a very long time a manufacturing hub. And along with that came industrial pollution into the water and the landscape. Before the refuge got its start, how had that legacy of pollution impacted the environment and the wildlife species that used to live there maybe before humans moved in?
Because of both industry, heavy industry, and the number of people that we've had and how old Detroit is, you have to remember that Detroit was founded in 1701, so it's 314 years old. And so we've had a dramatic impact on the Detroit River and its shoreline and its wetlands. And for example, back in the 1960s, the Detroit River was one of the most polluted rivers in North America. There was so much oil going into the Detroit River that, well, we still had major winter duck kills due to oil pollution. In the wintertime, the river would freeze over much of it. There would be some small pockets of open water. Those would be filled with oil. The ducks and the geese would come down, land in that, and they would die from oil pollution. And so that's where we started from, one of the most polluted rivers in North America. And we've seen now 40 years of continuous water pollution control, pollution prevention by industries and municipalities, and we've seen some dramatic improvement in the quality of the river. If you add that up, that's a pretty wonderful story of environmental improvement of the Detroit River. But that's not the best part of the story, and that's not the part of the story that I would like everyone to remember. Back then, peregrine falcons tried to nest and couldn't produce young because of DDT and other organochlorine contaminants for eggshell thinning. Same thing for bald eagles and osprey. The walleye population was in a crisis state. Lake sturgeon were not reproducing in the river. Lake whitefish were not reproducing in the river. Today, we stand here with bald eagles at 22 locations in the watershed producing young. Peregrine falcons, 10 of them, fledging each year in downtown Detroit on the skyscrapers and now living on the Ambassador Bridge and producing young. We have osprey for the first time since the late 1800s along the Detroit River in Gibraltar. We have lake sturgeon back for the first time spawning in 30 years in the river, and we are building reefs, spawning reefs for them. If you add that up, return of bald eagles, peregrine falcons, osprey, lake sturgeon, lake whitefish, walleye, and other species, it's one of the single most remarkable ecological recovery stories in North America.
John Hartig is the refuge manager for the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge. We're talking about his new book that looks at how cities can create areas of conservation in urban spaces. What are some of the challenges to developing this conservation ethic and creating spaces with diverse wildlife habitat in an urban area as opposed to a more rural setting where I'm guessing maybe some of the work has been done because there's just been fewer human hands on it?
Absolutely. Well, you hit on there with fewer hands on it. If you're in a big urban area, you have many stakeholder groups. So to get agreement on something takes longer in terms of time. It takes more meetings to get it done. The complexity of things is harder. Like in big urban areas, there's lots of people, and like Detroit, much of it is developed. And so there's fewer opportunities to do this, so that we have to partner with corporations, with municipalities to do this where we can, to create waterfront porches for both people and wildlife and give a compelling experience to people.
John Hartig is the refuge manager for the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge. We're talking about bringing conservation to cities, his new book about creating wildlife refuges in urban spaces. And I mean, part of what makes the Detroit River Wildlife Refuge so interesting is that, it's not just this pristine natural landscape that's been untouched by humans. It's actually integrated into the landscape of the city. So when you're designing a conservation area in an urban space, how do you strike that balance between human needs for development and housing and business and then wildlife habitat needs? How do you strike that balance and make sure that the space works for both animals and humans?
Yeah, so if there is a potential development coming down and it's something that we would be interested in to make it green and to create some habitat and everything else, the key is to be at the table when those decisions get made. So people like natural resource managers and biologists need to be at the table for some of these projects so that you can advocate for making it a win for both the economy and the environment and the community. Let me give you an example of that. Just think of in downtown Detroit on the Detroit River Walk. There was an opportunity 11 years ago to reclaim nearly 6 miles of waterfront in downtown Detroit, and it was important that some conservationists and biologists were at the table to say, well, we don't want steel sheet piling everywhere. We don't want concrete breakwall. We want to make it just as safe, just as stable. We want to enhance habitat for fish and wildlife, make it more aesthetically pleasing, and maybe even save some money. And that's called soft shoreline engineering. So if you look at that, there are some places on the Riverwalk and places and other parks and everything else where we've softened the shoreline and included habitat components. So it's being at the table, it's advocating for it, and you have to be in it for the long term. This is not like a flash in the pan. It's something where we need to be in it for the long haul, and we need to become part of the community fabric. We need to be in there so that we can help make these communities more sustainable in the end.
And so you've been working on this project for about 15 years now. Is there one moment or one part of this project that's just been the most rewarding for you?
I would say, you know, that it to always see the sparkle in kids' eyes, you know, this sense of wonder about natural resources and the outdoors. When we are involved in a project like Sturgeon Day or World Wetlands Day, or we're planting trees at the Refuge Gateway with students, and they see a bald eagle fly over, and they just amazed. It's just, it is always amazing to me to see when kids get it, and this sense of wonder about natural resources, and then let their mind take over and ask questions and everything else, and it's pretty special for all of us.
We've been talking about the push to create more spaces for conservation and wildlife habitat in cities. Our guest today has been John Hartig, manager for the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge and the author of the book Bringing Conservation to Cities. John, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, April.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.